from WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio Boston, this is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Leaf peeping, it's a New England fall tradition. The reds, yellows, even purples of turning leaves set against autumn afternoon light can make for gorgeous photos. Now, those pictures can do more than adorn your walls or maybe just sit around on your hard drive. Stephanie Spera is an assistant professor of geography and environment at the University of Richmond, and she wants your old fall foliage photos to better understand climate change. Stephanie, welcome to Living Lab Radio.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Let's start with basics. Why do leaves change these beautiful colors in the fall to begin with?
Yeah, so leaves are green to begin with because they make chlorophyll. And what chlorophyll does is it turns that CO2 into the oxygen we love and the sugar that they need to survive. So once the days start getting shorter and the temperatures start to cool down, they stop that chlorophyll production. And what happens is then that green pigment breaks down and the oranges and yellows that have been there the whole time, we can actually see them.
So this is really just a process of unmasking the yellows and oranges that were there all along.
Yes, totally. And then some trees, like maples, they produce something called anthocyanin, and that's what gives it that red pigment. And some people think that cooler nights actually leads to increased production of that red pigment. So all trees have those yellows and oranges. Only some trees make the reds, which is why they're so spectacular.
So you've already hinted at one possible connection between the color of the leaves and climate change. You said cooler nights might make for more red pigment, but lay some of this out. How would climate change potentially affect fall foliage coloration?
Yeah, so there's a lot that is going on. But the two cues that trees get to stop really making that green chlorophyll is day length and temperature. And once those cues become unsynced, which one could imagine with temperature increasing, we don't actually know what's going to happen on the broader level with fall foliage. A lot of the studies that have been done are species specific, but some people have linked an earlier bud burst in the spring to a later fall foliage season. Usually dry falls end in a later and shorter season. Actually, some rain and some cloudiness is good for that red production. So there's a lot of different variables that we're going to try and disentangle at a very broad scale because we're looking at Acadia National Park as a whole.
Why would an early bud burst in the spring be linked to a later change in color in the fall? Or is that just a reflection that the whole year has gotten warmer and that season has gotten longer?
I think it's exactly that. We're seeing the temperatures increase in the shoulder season. So those trees that really rely on those temperature cues, their bud bursts, their buds are bursting. What a fun phrase. Their buds are bursting earlier, and then they're not getting those temperature cues to shut down their chlorophyll production until later.
Well, Stephanie Spera, one of the things that you're really interested in getting at is not necessarily the biological, but actually some of the economic implications. This is big business. This brings visitors to New England. So how do you connect all the dots there, all the way from climate change to the color of leaves to the economic impacts?
We're doing this in a few different ways. But basically, we're interested in how temperature and precipitation have changed in Acadia National Park over time, if that's affected fall foliage. And what we've seen in Acadia, actually, is visitorship double in September and October since 1990. So we actually have people in the park giving out visitor surveys asking if fall foliage is even a thing they consider when planning their October and September trips. The cruises that go to Bar Harbor bring in millions of dollars to that region. And a lot of things actually close down on Indigenous Peoples Day, that people consider that the end of the season. But there are implications there that if the fall foliage is happening later and later, how much do you want to put into planning your trip a year in advance? Should businesses stay later open? So we're doing this interdisciplinary, top-down level approach where we're looking at the observational data, the meteorological data, the fall foliage data, but then we're also asking people, what do you think about when you plan your trip to Acadia in the fall?
And do they think about fall foliage?
We have techs in the park right now asking those questions, and I have not looked at any of the results. This is a happening as we speak survey.
You know, I personally love Acadia National Park, but I'm curious why that spot in particular for this type of study.
Yes. Well, I selfishly knew I was moving to Virginia, and I'm from New England, and I wanted a reason to go back to Maine in the fall. And it is my favorite national park. I've been to a few, and I love it so much. So any science that would get me into the park and help preserve it, help it from a park management standpoint, I was all about.
So Stephanie Spera, assuming that these current surveys show that people do consider fall foliage when making their decisions about when and whether to come to places in New England like Acadia National Park, the next question is fall foliage changing over time because of climate change? How do you actually start to answer that question?
Yeah, so the first thing we have to do is actually see if the timing of the onset and peak of fall foliage is changing at all. So we have satellite data that'll get us back until the year 2000 to actually be able to tease that apart. There are satellites circling the globe every day, taking pictures essentially of the Earth. So we can actually see the colors change over time and when they change. So we're starting that analysis now. The problem is the consistent satellite data, the daily satellite data, only gets us back to the year 2000. Which 20 years is good for a trend, but ask anyone, they'll be like, last year was an awful fall foliage year. We got no leaves. This year is great. So the more data we have, the less noise there is, the more we can back out a trend. So this is where we also have this giant citizen science component where we're asking anyone who's been to the park in the fall ever to send in their photos to help us piece together this puzzle that we don't have answers to because we don't have that consistent data from before the year 2000. I have a UR alum working with me now, and she's going through all of these old newspapers looking for snippets about when fall foliage occurred in Bar Harbor in the past. And we're just trying to add more data to this satellite record to help us piece together whether or not there is a long-term trend there and what variables they could be connected with.
On the one hand, obviously satellite data has this limitation that it only goes back so far. But at least you know that the technology is probably pretty consistent. You know what the technology is. You probably know what the settings of the instruments on the satellites are when they took those pictures. There's a lot of information and consistency in that data. When you start pulling photos from newspapers, from random people who went and took a photo with who knows what camera under who knows what conditions and used filters and altered them, how do you even begin to get actual data that you can reliably know what the color of that tree actually was 20, 40, 60 years ago when somebody took a picture of it?
Well, there's two different answers to that question. We can actually do some image analysis where we look at the amount of reds, greens, and blues in the fall foliage in the picture and normalize them to the other reds, greens, and blues. So we can actually do some quantitative work with the more recent photos. But we're also just looking for if people have pictures in front of Jordan Pond that show the bubbles or on Cadillac Mountain, and hopefully just piecing together a qualitative story like, oh, 25% of the leaves have turned. Oh, 50% of the leaves have turned at this date. 75% of the leaves have turned at this date. The farther back in time, the looser this trend becomes. But it's just sort of to give us an idea of what if what we're seeing is actually a real signal or not.
Those kinds of things that you're talking about there, where you're just trying to get a sense of maybe what percentage of the leaves that have changed, are those things that you could perhaps even tell from black and white photography? I mean, at some point, you're going to run out of people's color snapshots.
Oh, if we get any people's color snapshots, I will be excited. You don't even know. So we are also looking in the archives for black and white photos. I know there are specific labs that have actually saw about our work and have reached out to us to actually help us disentangle what these black and white photos have been. So that just means really fun, even more interdisciplinary collaborative research with other scientists who do image analysis work.
Now, there's one particular data set that I understand that doesn't get you back to black and white photos in the 40s or anything like that. But there's a pancake place in New Hampshire that's actually been collecting data on fall foliage since the mid-1970s. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I stumbled across this on the internet. But this pancake parlor in New Hampshire has been collecting data on the onset of fall foliage, the peak fall foliage, and I think the first snow of the year. And they have this just recorded and they update it every year to help people make decisions as to when to go to New Hampshire to check out fall foliage. And I just thought this was the coolest thing. And I feel like other places exist that must do this, that have this data that we also want. But basically what theirs have shown is really interesting, that it seems like leaves have started to turn earlier every year, but the peak fall foliage that they've recorded has happened later. So I don't know how to even begin to disentangle that, but it was the most fun thing to stumble across.
Talk about citizen science. That's fabulous.
I know. So if you have that record, if someone listening has your own personal record, we would love it. It would save us so much time.
I mean, that's really what you're asking for, is not necessarily anybody who's going to Acadia this year or went last year or even 10 years ago. You're kind of asking, like, did your parents or your grandparents go to Acadia, and can you pull those photos out of the attic? At which point the next question is, how would people get those photos and that data to you?
Right. So we have people sending in photos right now, which is also great. We have signs up in the park, because that actually does help us validate the satellite data to make sure these estimations we're coming up with from the satellite data are actually representative of what's happening on the ground.
So they're sending in photos that are from the past few years
to basically
ground truth the satellites.
That's exactly right. Ground truth. Exactly. And we're getting a lot from the post cell phone camera era, I would say. I understand that it is such a much bigger ask to actually go rifle through photos and scan them. If you're like my parents, you have slides, which I don't even know how you put onto a digital form. But they can send them multiple ways. One of the easiest ways they can just reach out to us and tell us they have these photos is just emailing us at anpfallfoliage@richmond.edu. We will take any, if you scan them and email them to us, that's great. If you actually want to send them to us via mailing address, we can just shoot us an email and we'll send you the mailing address. As someone who still uses a digital camera, I love a hard photo, so I understand. I don't want to take your memories
Absolutely.
Away from you. So if you want to scan them, or we can scan them here and we'll send them back. Truly, whatever is easiest for you, the citizen scientist that wants to help us out with this project and is willing to dig through those old albums.
It sounds like a fun Thanksgiving family project to go back and look at old family vacation photos and then see if they could actually help us understand some of the impacts of climate change right here in New England.
Oh, I love that idea. That's such a great idea. Everyone should do that on Thanksgiving.
Well, and we will, of course, put that email address and links to your research in the Citizen Science Project on our Facebook page. You can look for Living Lab Radio. That's Stephanie Spera. She is an assistant professor of geography and environment at the University of Richmond. She is looking for leaf peeping photos going back as far as you've got them to try to understand the impacts of climate change on fall foliage and tourism in New England. And she recently wrote about her Leaf Peep for Science project on theconversation.com. Stephanie, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been great.
Coming up, a new way of estimating ground elevation from satellite data suggests that three times as many people are at risk from rising seas. Living Lab Radio continues after a short break.